Oh, should we say welcome to Practice Makes Podcast?
Yes, we should. Welcome to Practice Makes Podcast. We are broadcasting live from a polling booth, a voting booth, one or the other. Not quite sure.
And then right off the bat, we're showing how we're liars.
Well, it's too late to undo the lies, so we'll just tell them lies, tell them sweet little lies.
Yeah.
As Stevie Nicks would have us do it.
And I'm going to pretend as if you care and introduce myself. I'm Tyler Kingsbury.
And I'm Jordy Wofford. We're your lovable co-hosts of this podcast of intellectual repartee. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And I'm sure what's on all of y'all's minds is what's on our mind, and that is the United States presidential election.
Yeah, it's still going on. They're still counting. It's really close, like it tends to be. Surprisingly, I felt like, I mean, I'm surprised.
I was surprised too. I was expecting for it to be a quite decisive victory, and I was expecting it to, well, I was expecting one thing. I was expecting it to either be a decisive victory right away, or else, like, I was expecting it to be so close that it would end up being contested in the court. So I guess in that sense, I'm not surprised, but I guess my hopeful side was just kind of wishing for a quick and easy victory so that this could all be put behind us. But I guess it's not going to work out that way.
Yeah. I mean, when I was listening to a podcast, I think it was, it might've been Throughline again, which is an NPR podcast, but then again, it might've been Hidden Brain. so helpful. But it was talking about, like, he was interviewing various people in different states. Like, if they were Trump supporters, he would ask them, and they would be more traditionally Republican in these areas. And these people were like, no, I'm a Democrat. And it was actually, everything was very surprising. And then the reasons people were voting for Biden were surprising reasons. And even for me, like, kind of down to the wire, I was like, I am not interested in either of these candidates. And that was the same, like, in the last election too. And knowing that, makes me think maybe there were quite a few people that were kind of just like, I don't freaking care. 'Cause there's so much misinformation out there. And half the time, you know, Trump talks about fake news, and every once in a while it's true. It's like, you look at what he actually said and you're like, yeah, they definitely blew that out of proportion. So then you're just like, I don't know what to believe.
Well, to some extent there is a lot of fake news out there, because we live in our own little isolated bubbles, and, you know, we tend to be around people who think and feel the same way that we do. And with all the algorithms that there are on the internet and on social media, it just kind of shares articles that reinforce the beliefs that we already have.
Right.
And so that's kind of what ended up happening to me, is I was really thinking it was going to go a certain way. And the reality is that it's not as cut and dry as we think it is. And the country is really divided down the middle.
Yeah, it's, whoever wins, half the country is going to be upset either way.
Yeah, we take turns being pissed off at one side or the other. I felt this time around, I don't know, there was a certain energy or lack thereof in the air for this election cycle, I felt. And I think that was mostly due to COVID.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like historically American elections go on way, way, way too long. Oh. Like, we literally start talking about the next election the day after the election.
Yeah.
And that's actually really, to Americans, I think they'll be surprised to see that that's not really a normal thing in the rest of the world. Like in Great Britain and here in Canada where I live, elections are something that's decided very quickly. Mm. Like, I remember the last federal election, or the election before last, Canadians were complaining because the election was too long. It went on for like 6 weeks.
Oh, that is a long time. But that was like with campaigning and everything, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, the U.S., like, it starts like a years in advance because the candidates start doing primaries. Then they keep making television appearances. And it goes on for just months and months. But this time around, I really felt like we were in an election year and the COVID kind of was overhanging all of that. And it wasn't really in the forefront of people's minds. At least it wasn't for me anyway.
Yeah. Another part that just had me pretty discouraged was that it was just between these two old white dudes. And I just have a hard time getting behind, I don't know, I just, they're not relatable to me or something. I don't know what it is, but I didn't vote for Biden in the primaries. And when I looked in my, 'cause you can track your ballot, I saw that my vote was counted for this election, but in the primaries, it wasn't. And so it was like, but I guess Colorado still elected the candidate that I wanted. So however that happened, it wasn't my part. But
yeah, that's just the one thing about the electoral college system, or it's almost irrelevant if you vote or not, if you don't really live in a swing state. Colorado, I think it's considered to be a swing state, but I think that's changing.
Yeah, because of all the liberal people moving from California to Colorado to smoke weed.
Yeah. We could do another episode just on that. But and the other thing about the electoral college system is, like, your vote gets thrown out anyway if the rest of the state votes another way. So it's...
Yeah. So I was just looking up, Oregon did legalize... or decriminalize the possession of illegal drugs.
Well, I don't know if everyone out there will agree with that, but I definitely think that that's a positive thing. I feel that the studies show that if you decriminalize drug possessions and instead of sending people to jail, people... Ah! T'es tombé. Yes, I think the best solution.
She's looking forward to the results of her interview.
She's happy. Mm-hmm. I definitely think decriminalization is the way to go, and hopefully Oregon will serve as an example going forward.
I vote for these kind of things, not because I use drugs or I want to have abortions. It's because I am thinking about the other people that are experiencing having to deal with this stuff. Like someone that has an addiction. I think you said this. They shouldn't be put in jail because they have an addiction. You know, like oxycodone is one of the drugs that they decriminalized, and that is created by big companies, big pharmaceutical companies, one of which was just in a lawsuit where they paid out a bunch of money because they pled guilty for being basically a drug dealer. So, and that's not, I mean, don't do pills, guys. Maybe you'll maybe you'll like them too much, but if there are people that are addicted to that stuff, it's, they shouldn't be in jail for it. That's the main thing with that.
No, and I think that's how people tend to view these things. They tend to hear things about drugs and they'll think, oh, well, I don't do that. And anyone who does is really a terrible person. And you need to kind of look outside of yourself and try and look at it objectively and not demonize people who have problems like that.
Yeah. And, are we talking about the history of anything today?
Yes, we are. I think we should get right into the subject.
I didn't know. I mean, it's who cares, you know?
No, I'm feeling a little bit less, in a formal mood because of, the election, but mm-hmm, yeah. For that very same reason, I thought it would be worth going over the history of some contentious U.S. presidential elections that have happened in the past.
Oh, cool.
In light of what's going on. So I did some strenuous and deep research, and I went onto history.com, and I found the list, their list of the 8 most contentious U.S. presidential elections. So a number of these I'm not too terribly familiar with, but some I definitely will have a few things to add to it.
For me, and maybe for some of the listeners, explain to me what contentious means.
Contentious means controversial or not agreed upon.
Okay, great.
Like, contentious means it's like high stakes and people are going to contest the results of the election.
Cool.
So our first one is in 1800, and that was the election where Thomas Jefferson won the presidency. The article reads, as fans of the Broadway musical Hamilton well know, this election went down just as the nation's first political parties were taking shape. At the time, the Electoral College process was far different than it is today. Each elector voted for 2 candidates. The one with the most votes became president, while the runner-up became vice president. I think that, yeah, people found out pretty quickly that this system was not going to work. The article continues. Under the system, Thomas Jefferson and his chosen VP pick, Aaron Burr, tied for first place, 73-73, due to a communication error among Democratic-Republican electors, or a Burr-led conspiracy, depending on whom you believe. President John Adams, a member of the rival Federalist Party, managed only 65 votes. For the first of only 2 times in history, the election went to the House of Representatives. Alexander Hamilton, the nation's first Treasury Secretary, turned the tie by lobbying his fellow Federalists to throw their support to Jefferson. Though Hamilton and Jefferson despised each other, Hamilton considered him a safer choice than Burr, whom he claimed loves nothing but himself, thinks of nothing but his own aggrandizement. The Virginian walked into the White House. Burr became vice president. He would kill Hamilton in a duel 3 years later. That's what I was going to talk about after this. But then the 12th Amendment was added to the Constitution to specify that electors vote separately for the nation's 2 highest offices.
Yeah, wasn't they had to pass some kind of law or something where people couldn't go into like polling areas and be aggressive, like threatening?
I don't know if that was something that happened around this time period. I know after the time of, after the Civil War, there were a lot of laws that were made, changes to like how elections were to be conducted and who was allowed to have the vote. I don't know that offhand, but yeah, like people intimidating people at elections has been I know in New York City in the 19th century, elections were, there were really fraudulent elections taking place. Like people would grow their beards out and they would vote like 3 or 4 times because they would have the full beard. Then they would shave down to a mustache and sideburns and then they would shave the sideburns off and they would just have the mustache and then they would go in clean shaved so that one person could vote several times.
So that was the only way to tell who was based on their facial hair. No one, they didn't have ID.
Yeah, I mean, no, there are a lot of shenanigans taking place. And just as you were saying, there would be gang members who would be representing one candidate or the other that would be intimidating people outside of the polls. Theoretically, stuff like that doesn't take place anymore, but I think we all know that things like that can still happen.
I was seeing Trump saying something about telling people to go to the polls and
intimidate.
I think he was meaning it to sound like make sure people aren't being like dishonest, but you know, a lot of what he says is taken out of context and then misconstrued and people are like, he supports us. We are the white nationalists. And then he's like, oh, whoops. Oh, well, at least they support me.
Well, some things never change. There's always intimidation during elections. One thing that does change, though, in regards to this election of 1800 is the relationship between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. Like, I think it's pretty safe to say that we couldn't imagine the Treasury Secretary getting into a duel with the Vice President and shooting him dead. These guys had some real bad blood. I think a lot of it had to do with a romantic relationship. I can't quite remember. But, like, it went on for several years, and then I think Aaron Burr finally ended up challenging Hamilton to a duel, and he ended up losing.
I challenge you to a duel.
Yeah, even just dueling, like, people don't do that anymore.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, it would probably be a faster way to solve things.
Yeah, maybe so.
So, moving on to 1824. This was the election of John Quincy Adams. By this time, the Federalist Party had dissolved, and all four candidates for president were Democratic Republicans. Old Hickory, also known as Andrew Jackson, hero of the War of 1812, won the popular vote by fewer than 39,000 ballots and captured 99 electoral votes.
Whoa.
Secretary of State John Quincy Adams took 84 electoral votes, with 41 going to Treasury Secretary William Crawford and 37 to House Speaker Henry Clay. As no candidate earned a majority of electoral votes, the election again went to the House of Representatives. Clay was eliminated from the contention. Only three candidates could be considered, but still controlled the House. After a month of backroom negotiations, Clay supporters largely threw their weight behind Adams, enabling him to win the House vote. As states that had cast most of their electoral votes for Jackson, Maryland, Illinois, Louisiana, and Kentucky, now turned in favor of Adams. When Adams chose Clay as his Secretary of State soon after his inauguration, an enraged Jackson called it a corrupt bargain. Quitting his Senate post, he vowed to come back and win in 1828, which he did at the head of a new Democratic Party, toppling Adams, by then leader of the National Republican Party, after only one term. So we didn't see the last of Jackson after that.
So that was the invention of the Democratic versus Republican parties?
Yeah, this is like when they're starting to really take shape, because we had, in the beginning, we didn't even have political parties with George Washington. And then there was a party. It was the Whig Party after that, and not spelled W-I-G, it's spelled W-H-I-G-G, I think.
Oh, Whig.
Whig Party. But this is when we're starting to have the Republican Democrat duality really solidify. And Andrew Jackson's an interesting figure. He's really worth doing some research on or looking up. He was, I think a lot of people take issue with this comparison, but I think it's pretty interesting. He was a little bit like the Donald Trump of the 19th century.
Oh, really?
Like, he had a pretty, he was a character, and a lot of the elites really didn't like him because of his attitude. And he was not afraid to really impose his will on, like, Congress. And what this was like a lot of when the first criticisms of, like, an imperial presidency started coming about, because he was starting to, his critics were saying that he was starting to exercise his power like an emperor. This would be after, like, he defeated John Quincy Adams. But, I remember there's one illustration of Andrew Jackson. He's, like, he's boxing. He's got his shirt off, and he's...
Is he a babe?
I always thought he... Do you know the show Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
I always thought he kind of looked like Rick Sanchez a little bit. Moving on, I think this is one people might start to be a little bit more familiar with. This is 1860, and this is the election of Abraham Lincoln.
Hmm.
The election of 1860 wasn't just contentious, it tore the nation apart.
Hmm.
Abraham Lincoln, the chosen nominee of the fledgling Republican Party and a steadfast opponent of slavery, wasn't even on the ballot in most southern states.
Oh.
Shows how much they did not get along at this time.
Mm-hmm.
While the Democratic Party went with Lincoln's Illinois rival, Senator Stephen Douglas, as their candidate, the southern branch of the party defected, choosing sitting Vice President John Breckinridge as its candidate. Senator John Bell of Tennessee rounded out the race on the ticket of the new Constitution Union Party. Lincoln won only 40% of the popular vote, but took most of the electoral votes in the North, along with California and Oregon. Breckinridge won the electoral votes in most of the South, along with Maryland and Delaware. Bell won Tennessee, Kentucky, and Virginia, while Douglas captured only Missouri. Despite finishing second in the popular vote, just weeks after Lincoln's victory, South Carolina voted to secede. Six more southern states followed, forming the Confederate States of America in February of 1861, with Jefferson Davis as president.
Above Lincoln?
Lincoln was in the president of the North, and Jefferson Davis was in the South.
So there were two presidents?
Yeah, well, two basic presidents. I don't want to say they were both claiming the presidency of the United States, because the South just outright declared itself a separate state.
Hmm.
Or a separate country, I mean.
And this was pre the Civil War then?
Well, this is right leading up to the Civil War. It's 1861 and it's on, basically.
Oh, great.
So we think we've got it bad now. Imagine how much bad blood there was back then.
Wow.
But yeah, to put things into perspective, to show how tense things were around this time, was the caning of Charles Sumner.
Caning?
The caning.
Is that when you hit someone several times with a cane?
Exactly. It's just what the name implies. This was in the U.S. Senate in 1856 when Representative Preston Brooks, a pro-slavery Democrat from South Carolina, used a walking cane to attack Senator Charles Sumner, an abolitionist Republican from Massachusetts.
Whoa!
In retaliation for a speech given by Sumner 2 days earlier. So, like I said, if we think things are bad now, I mean, we had senators outright hitting each other on the on the Senate floor, which admittedly would be quite entertaining.
Yeah.
But not a very good sign of the health of the nation.
Right. And how did they report that kind of stuff? Like in the newspaper or?
Yeah, it was in the news, like in the newspaper, because, I mean, they didn't have it. It wasn't like live, broadcasted live or anything like that.
Yeah. That would be good front page news.
It sure would. All right. Moving forward to 1876, this was the election of Rutherford Hayes. Democratic Governor Samuel Tilden of New York won 250,000 more ballots in the popular vote than his Republican opponent, Rutherford Hayes, and snagged 19 more electoral votes. But Tilden was still one electoral vote short of the required majority, 185. Today it's 270, and 20 votes remained uncounted. Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina remained too close to call, as each party accused the other of fraud, while in Oregon, an elector was declared illegal because he had drugs on him. No, that's not true.
Oh.
And replaced with controversial results. As the crisis mounted, threats of another civil war loomed.
Oh, God.
In an unprecedented move, Congress established a 15-member commission of senators, congressmen, and Supreme Court justices, including 7 Republicans, 7 Democrats, and an independent, to decide the election. After the swing vote turned in Hayes' favor, he was awarded all 20 electoral votes from the disputed states, giving him the necessary 185. After the Democrats threatened to filibuster and block the official vote counting, the issue was settled in negotiations at D.C.'s Wormley Hotel in February of 1877. The Democrats would accept Hayes' victory, provided that Hayes remove all federal troops from the South, among other conditions. The compromise consolidated Democratic control of the region, effectively ending Reconstruction and reversing the gains that African Americans had made during the post-Civil War era. So, yeah, just to give a little bit of background, this was during a period after the Civil War called Reconstruction, where slavery had been abolished and the federal government was really present in the South, trying to impose changes like to voting and safety for recently freed slaves. And this was considered an occupation by a lot of people in the South. And this, there was a lot of tension. This is like around the time when the Ku Klux Klan was created as a kind of like underground resistance movement to Reconstruction. And I guess this election was so contested and it was so tense that even though the South didn't get their candidate in place, they were able to get some concessions from the North and kind of make a regression in all of the changes that have been made after the Civil War. So this would be probably right around when what's known as the Jim Crow era would be starting. So let's move on to the election of 1912. And this would be the election of President Theodore Roosevelt, or Teddy Roosevelt as he's known. Recently returned from the 10-month African safari that he took after leaving the White House, Theodore Roosevelt found himself drawn back into politics as the 1912 election approached. After his close friend and handpicked successor, William Howard Taft, angered Roosevelt and fellow progressives by siding increasingly with the conservative wing of the Republican Party, Roosevelt challenged Taft in the primaries. Denied the nomination, he bolted with his supporters and formed the Progressive Party. In one particularly shocking moment of this wild campaign season, a fanatic shot Roosevelt in the chest during an event in Wisconsin. I never knew that Roosevelt had an assassination attempt made on him.
Oh, I think
the
I had heard that.
Self-proclaimed Bull Moose actually finished delivering his speech after taking the bullet. Wow. Now, say what you will about Theodore Roosevelt. That's hardcore. That's props to Roosevelt.
Wow.
In the end, Roosevelt and Taft split the Republican vote, helping the Democrat Woodrow Wilson win the White House despite capturing less than 50% majorities in many states. Roosevelt finished second and Taft third, the last time in history that a major party candidate would fail to finish either first or second in a presidential campaign. Election. In fourth place, Eugene Debs, the Socialist Party candidate, won 6% of the popular vote, turning in the best ever showing for a socialist candidate in a U.S. general election. And it's hard kind of for us today to, we don't really know here that much about Theodore Roosevelt, but he was definitely like one of the most popular figures in U.S. history. Like that's why his face is on Mount Rushmore. Like he was really seen like as a radical reformist, and he made a lot of changes. One thing I can say that he did that we still kind of experience today is he set aside a lot of public space to create national parks. Eugene Debs, that's an interesting person in history. He was part of the socialist movement in the U.S. and this was like in a movement when a lot of the labor strikes were going on, like a lot of the workers' movements, like kind of what we were talking about last week. And Eugene Debs was a central figure in all of that. And I think he ended up being arrested.
Who?
Eugene Debs.
Who is that again?
He was the socialist candidate during this election. He got 6% of the vote. And he was kind of locked up on charges of like what's called sedition. And sedition, that means like speaking out against the government.
Oh.
And I think, you know, he didn't end up dying in prison, but he ended up being in prison for quite a while. Yeah. He would end up being in prison by Woodrow Wilson, who was the winner of this election. During what was known as the Red Scare. Moving forward to 1948, this was an interesting election. The outcome of the 1948 election looked clear. President Harry Truman was on his way out. In the midterm elections of 1946, both houses of Congress had gone Republican for the first time in nearly 20 years, and opinion polls showed only 1 in 3 Americans approved of Truman's leadership. though Republican challenger Thomas Dewey was a strong candidate, having lost a close race to Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1944, Truman's biggest struggle was opposition within his own party. His own Commerce Secretary quit to run against him on the Progressive Party ticket, while Truman's public support of civil rights for African Americans lost him Southern conservative Democrats. These Southern Democrats walked out of the National Convention and formed their own states' rights party, known as Dixiecrats, behind South Carolina Governor Strom Thurmond. Truman campaigned hard throughout the fall, however, making several whistle-top stop train tours across the country in order to make the case that a do-nothing Republican Congress was blocking his proposals and a Republican successor would repeal the New Deal programs that had saved the country from the Depression. Gallup's last pre-election poll, which showed Dewey beating Truman by 5 percentage points, went public on Election Day, even though it had been taken in mid-October. After Truman went to bed that night, believing he had lost, his Secret Service agents had to wake him at 4 a.m. to break the news of his victory. In a famous photo, a grinning Truman held up a copy of the Chicago Tribune's morning edition, which went to press earlier than usual due to a printer's strike. The headline, Dewey Defeats Truman. Yeah, and if anyone wants to look up that photo, it's worth 1,000 words. You can see the big grin on Truman's face holding up the newspaper. And that must have been a pretty embarrassing moment for Dewey.
I wonder how long it took them to pick the name Dixiecrats, because I can never come up with like a band name or anything like that. It's just, I've never decided. I don't know how they come up with that stuff.
Well, call your band the Dixiecrats. It hasn't been used since 1948, so it's up for grabs. It's got to no longer have copyright issues with it.
Maybe. There might be some Dixiecrats out there.
Number 7. I think a lot of people will remember this. People who are listeners that are probably within our age range. This is the 2000 election of President George W. Bush.
Ah.
It was the election that went on forever, or at least that's what it seemed like. In the race between Al Gore and George W. Bush, it all came down to the outcome in Florida. TV networks initially announced the state had gone in Gore's favor, then said it was too close to call before finally calling it for the Texas governor. With just a few hundred votes separating the candidates in Florida, the lawsuits and recounts began in full force, including heated disputes over confusing or improperly punched ballots, missing names on voter rolls, and multiple requests for ID from minority voters. 5 agonizing weeks after the election, the U.S. Supreme Court, yeah, I remember that, it went on forever.
Oh my God.
The U.S. Supreme Court had the final word, ruling by a narrow majority to stop the recount ordered by the Florida Supreme Court on the grounds it violated the constitutional principle that all votes must be treated equally. Bush, who won 30 states counting Florida and maintained a razor-thin 5-vote majority in the Electoral College, would be the first candidate in 112 years to win the presidency without prevailing in the popular vote.
Huh.
He trailed Gore by more than 500,000 votes.
Oh my God. Like, when that happened, it created like these two different timelines. You know, there's the parallel universe where Gore wins, and it just changes like the way that we treat the environment. You know, I just feel like I can only imagine the utopia we'd be living in.
I don't know if it would be a utopia, but we wouldn't have invaded Iraq, that's for sure. Maybe not even Afghanistan. So things would definitely be a lot different. But that's history for you, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if I should even read this one because it's a little close to home. It's the 2016 election.
Oh, is that the second? Wait. Oh, that's the Trump.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just read it. Bush v. Gore may have been the first time in modern history a president was elected despite losing the popular vote, but it wasn't the last. Mm. In 2016, businessman and reality TV host Donald J. Trump defeated former First Lady, Senator, and Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, even though she received 3 million more votes than him in the popular vote.
3 million!
wow, the first time around it was 500,000. Now we're talking 3 million. I could see why people were upset.
Do you understand how that happens?
Yeah, I mean, California has a bigger population, but if you get more states that, you know, have less people in them, and they have more. The whole point of the Electoral College was not to let large populous states have a monopoly on the election.
Right.
So you, like, you can say what you will about it, but the point was to let rural states with lower populations have more weight in their vote than they would normally.
Mm-hmm. Well, also it was so that, I mean, it was first invented so that slaves could be counted as part of the population, like, as votes, even though they couldn't vote.
I think slaves were counted as only 3/5 of a person or something.
I thought
that
it was 3/4, but yeah.
3/4, like, they weren't a whole person.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, you can make a judgment about the Electoral College, but yeah, the point is to not let basically California, Texas, and New York decide every single election.
Yeah, and California is more Democrat, and then Texas would be more Republican, right?
Yeah, so there would be kind of, although now at this point, Texas seems like it's going to be becoming a swing state.
Mm.
It's becoming more and more Democratic.
Yeah, which is surprising because everyone down there sounds like they are rednecks.
Well, historic.
Everyone. If you have a country accent, you are just default Republican.
The election was unprecedented in many other ways. Trump, who ran despite never having held elected office, brought unabashed populism to the campaign trail. Trump's statements on immigration, he called for a total and complete ban on Muslims entering the U.S. and at one point referred to Mexicans as rapists, gained him frequent headlines in the press. In October of 2016, after Trump had accepted the Republican nomination, an audio recording from 2005 surfaced of him bragging about sexually assaulting women. Republican officials condemned the comments but did not renounce their support for Trump. Despite trailing Clinton in national polls, Trump won several critical states in the Midwest and Rust Belt, giving him an advantage in the Electoral College. He was inaugurated on January of 2017, the day after upwards of 5 million people around the country protested his new administration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess it would definitely warrant being on that list. It was a controversial election. And I think in terms of the Electoral College, though, it was a landslide for Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at what the outcome was here real quick. He got, well, it was relatively close. He got over 300 electoral votes and Clinton got about 230.
Mm.
So it was definitely, it depends on what you call a landslide. I mean, in the terms of the popular vote, it was definitely not a landslide. But
right.
He definitely got quite a few more electoral votes there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope that helps people see that these kind of things do occur fairly regularly in the United States. And I guess maybe it's just baked into the cake.
That's,
this is who we are and this is how it's going to be. But we're probably making history right now as we speak. As of now, I don't think the election has been decided.
Not that I know of. I haven't looked in a couple hours, but it is 10:30 a.m. on November 4th.
If I were a betting man, I would be willing to wager that this is probably going to resemble the 2000 election and that it will end up being drawn out for several weeks and end up going to the Supreme Court.
Is that what happened in 2016?
Yeah.
Several
not
weeks.
2016, 2000.
2000?
No, 2016 was decided the night of.
Bren just sent me a message and she said, with lots of H's, I was trying to comment or add a review. Great episode and so cute. Ha ha ha. Great episode and also adorable. Oh, thanks. Are you talking about the Kanye West episode? Ha ha ha. Yes, I cracked up. You two are so funny together.
I'm glad she liked it. I was sorry. Well, I did end up changing your mind later, but
I'm glad she liked it. I was like, if Bren is still listening, which I was like, didn't think she'd make it through the whole thing, but she did apparently.
Well, unfortunately, Mr. West didn't pull through.
Yeah, what's going on with that? Have you heard anything? Like, did he get any votes or?
I don't know. Hold on a second. Let me look. Let me look up in the news, see if he got anything. Is there a... Hold on. this is in French. I'm going to have to translate. With that, surprise, surprise, Kanye West voted for Kanye West.
I thought it was supposed to be anonymous.
Yeah, I think technically it's illegal to share who you voted for.
But... He's the only one that did?
Probably. I'm trying to see what his... results were.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything?
Yeah, I almost voted for you, Kanye. Not that he's listening to this episode. He's gonna... Can you imagine?
Why, he almost voted for me. I like
he
her.
Sends us a message on like Instagram. He's like, thanks for the episode. Or fuck you guys. I'm suing you. I'd be like, the best hater ever.
Oh, as of 7:30 a.m., Kanye West looks to have received almost 60,000 votes in total.
Wow.
He proved most popular in Tennessee, where 10,000 voters came out to support him. Unfortunately, Kanye didn't exceed more than 0.4% of any state's vote.
Wow.
That's
Tennessee.
Still pretty impressive. I mean,
wonder why Tennessee.
He might be from Tennessee.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Tennessee's also like a big music state, so he probably does like a lot of recording. He's probably there. I'm just speculating.
What else?
Well, that's basically all I have for the history of. I didn't know if you had anything else you wanted to add. I think we're looking at probably over an hour for this episode.
No, we're at 46 minutes.
46? Oh, not too bad.
No.
But, no, I guess if I had anything else to add to it all, I guess I would just try and let people, because we, at this point, we don't know where the election's going to go, and whatever the results are, half of the country is going to be very, very upset.
Yeah.
And I think, the speculation about there being a civil war is very exaggerated. It's grossly exaggerated even, but I do think there's a real possibility for violence.
Mm-hmm. And the next time maybe you're mad at someone, just say, I challenge you to a duel. And I say we bring that back.
I say we bring it back because it's only having two consenting adults getting hurt instead of innocent people.
And it's assertive. It's like you're saying what you want. You're saying you have a problem.
I would say if people who want to go out there and express themselves, if they're upset with the results one way or the other, I'd say they certainly have that right. But just be careful and be safe and don't put yourself at risk because you only have one life. And I think it's really, believe me, neither of these candidates deserve you to throw away your life in their name.
Mm, yeah, fuck them.
And you can make a difference in so many other ways. So try and keep things in perspective.
Preach.
And I am a U.S. citizen who ended up immigrating to Canada. And I know one of the stereotypes is that people want to move to Canada afterwards. And I would definitely say that
you're not allowed. Because of the pandemic.
Well, there's that. But you should probably reevaluate your reasons if you're just doing it because of an election. Because in my case, immigrating took nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
So if you're just moving because you don't like someone who got elected into office, chances are by the time you end up actually going to Canada, that person won't even be in office anymore. So maybe do a little bit of research on Canada or anywhere else before moving there, making a rash decision. And I guess that's about it. I'll look up a quote here. Let's see who I want to quote this time. I'm almost tempted to quote Kanye West again.
He's good, man. He's got some good stuff to say.
Yeah, let's have another quote from Kanye West.
Some good one-liners.
Yeah, because he deserves it. Oh, I like this one. This is a more positive one, and I think it's a more idealistic, and I think it's a little relevant to what's going on right now. But Mr. West says, "People always say that you can't please everybody. I think that's a cop-out. Why not attempt it? Because think of all the people you will please if you try."
Aww.
I like that.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's idealistic, like I said. It's optimistic.
But as a reformed people pleaser, I disagree with that. And I think you're better off saying fuck everyone. But then again, I'm also a bitter person now. So maybe you prefer to not be that?
It's a nice sentiment. If it's actually applicable, that's open to debate. And on that note, you're kind of breaking up on me with the connection. And Andrea's fidgeting all around me, so maybe that's a good place to leave off.
Okay, thank you all for listening. Go to our website, practicemixpodcast.com. Rate us on Apple Podcasts. Send us an email. Say hi, Instagram, or through the website.
Yes, thank you all for listening, and enjoy the spectacle that is the U.S. election, and we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
If there is a next week.
Oh, God.
Bye.